Let me start first with explaining what kind of questions we want to address here. So first question is, it's old, fascinating, and famously hard question, which is, what is planary and Mills theory? And we have a project of the answer to this question, so it's supposed to be a free string theory. So specifically, what we're trying to understand here is that what is the bullshit theory of these strings? And as I said, well, it's a hard question, but I'll try to convince you that now is maybe a good time when one can make concrete progress in answering this question. Another question, which is like somewhat related, well, this is a very broad question about very specific and concrete theory. This will be more concrete question, but about unknown theory. And it's motivated to a large extent by recent progress, which Mrs. Pedra with friends achieved in understanding n equal 4 super young Mills. Namely, well, for a long time we knew there are beautiful story about integrability in two dimensions. So there are these very nice theories, which are non-trivial, but solvable. And we understand what integrability means in two dimensions to a large extent. Zero approximations means that there is no particle production. And there are good reasons to think that that story, it's a story about two-dimensional physics, for instance, because of Kalman-Mandula theorem. But I think now we have good evidence that there are high-dimensional theories which are also integrable, even though I'm not sure there is really understanding what that means. But in the n equal 4, planar n equal 4, Superion Mills is integrable in the most reasonable way of meaning what integral means. It's non-trivial theory, which is exactly solvable. The question we're trying to ask, well, are there other integrable theories in high dimensions? And in particular, are there confining theories like that? Are there non-conformal theories like that? Of course, to start addressing this question, it would be nice to reformulate it more concretely, to have some workable criterion for integrability. And in a broad class of theories, I think there is an actual criterion for such a thing. Namely, what I need a theory to have a mass gap. So I'm thinking about confining theory, not only confining, but also gap theory. That's one condition which I need. And second condition which I need, and really, pure glue dynamics, pure glue would be kind of prototype example of a theory of kind of thinking about this. So the second condition which I need is that there is should be some property which prevents confining strings to break. So there should be something like central symmetry in pure glue. I guess the right language to talk about this has been developed by Davide with his friends. So there should be unbroken global one-form symmetry. Means not spontaneously broken, and that means that there are confining strings. So in pure young Mills, this is central symmetry. So in a situation like that, we can consider now a background where you start with an empty flat space-time and put a kind of infinitely long string there. Or you can also, if you are kind of not comfortable with backgrounds of which has infinite energy, you can start from compactifying your theory, on a large circle and consider background with flux tube which wraps around the circle, and then consider the regime when the size of the circle goes to infinity. That's what really practically I mean about infinitely long string. When we think about this background, then as we look at the theory, what happens in the theory as a function of energy, then there is a mass gap, the mass of the light is global in pure glue example. So at large energies, there is a four-dimensional just bulk glue dynamics which describes this theory. And at energies below the global mass, all the excitations which are left in this theory, these are just modes which live on a string. In particular, we're guaranteed to have Goldstone modes, which are just transverse modes, wiggles propagating along the string. So there is some two-dimensional theory which lives at low energies. So in this class of theories, we have natural two-dimensional theory associated to our four-dimensional theory. And so given that we understand better what integrability means in two-dimensional theory, the question we want to ask, well, are there examples of confinement theories where this two-dimensional theory would be integrable? And I think this criterion, it matches closely what happens in equal four Superion Mills. I think the best understanding of integrability there comes from integrability of the volt sheet of strings propagating in dual ADS5 cross S5 geometry. They're not really confining strings because there is no confining, there's no mass gap, but I think it's closest analog one can think of this question. Now, just like in n equals 4 story, I think, well, it would be too much to expect for something like this to happen at finite n. I think it's more reasonable to think that there could be examples like that at infinite n. Well, and actually at infinite n, something else happens. So at infinite n, so there is this at finite n, there is two-dimensional theory with cutoff mg, and really above the mass of the lightest glue ball, when you start colliding particles on a volt sheet, then you start producing bulk glue balls. However, as n is being increased, then the regime of validity where two-dimensional theory is unitary, it starts going to high energy, effective cutoff, where unitarity breaks down, becomes larger and larger, just because production of bulk glue balls is 1 over n suppressed. So one can make a rough estimate of the scale. So roughly, one can, like, for highly excited state on a string, one can think it's, well, it's serious, some kind of, one can consider some long, like, generic string configuration moving this way, some long generic string configuration moving that way. Then the production of glue balls corresponds to self intersections of a string with subsequent interconnection. So one may estimate then the number of self intersections, which is determined by actually it turns out to be dominated by loops of the small size. And then taking account that the probability of interconnection, so in probabilities, and we get a self intersection that results in a emission of a loop in the bulk is the coupling constant, which responsible for this is 1 over n. Then doing this estimate, one gets the estimate for this cutoff scale that is scaled as nc over ls. So we were thinking about fundamental strings that would be analog of Planck scale, which I think it makes sense. So I'm not 100% sure that's estimate. Well, there could be some subtleties in this estimates, but I think I don't really need exact scaling. But there, I think the message is correct that the cutoff becomes larger and larger as energies as n grows. So in the planar limit, so that way one gets two-dimensional theory which extends at arbitrary high energies. And I think really there are chances, more chances that in that regime one can get integrable theory. So really I think the hope would be that to find examples of gauge theories where that two-dimensional theory in the planar limit is integrable. So.
Between the bulk glue balls and the
defect
and string? The bulk glue balls are almost free because the interactions.
Yes.
Go like one over n. You think instead it's just the same as saying the interactions with the bulk glue balls?
No, I think it is the same, yeah.
Do you know if there is any some argument based on, you know, the same thing that the sort of thing that I used to show that the bulk glue balls go like one over n? counting.
Yeah, I didn't find, yeah, because one would think that this kind of estimate should have done a long time ago. I didn't manage to find it anywhere, but that's kind of that's the best we managed to do. So like just count the estimates in elbow self intersections. But yeah, it should be maybe it exists. Just yeah, I don't know. But the answer looks reasonable. I don't know how kind of how in general approach this question, how to look for theories of this kind. So to make it more concrete, in particular, one may ask. So can we, like coming back to question number one, can we say something about pure real meals? Can we exclude that it is integrable in this sense for some finite n? Can we say something about what happens at infinite n? So that's the more concrete version of this question. As far as this general version of this question goes, so what we managed to prove a no-go result, well, which will allow us to say something about pure real meals. So no-go result of the following kind. So that integrability defined this way requires extra massless states on the world sheet. So if you have a theory where no matter what the macroscopic theory, but if at low energies, the only massless modes on the world sheet of a string are these Goldstone modes, translational Goldstones, then, well, I'm here talking about actually, in four dimensions, it's more subtle in three dimensions. But in four dimensions, the integrability only possible if there are additional massless modes on the world sheet of a string. Well, in particular, that immediately applies because there is lattice data for pure real meals. So, from which we know that there are no such massless states. This for NC, there is data for this C equals 3 or 5. So we know that those series cannot be integrable in this sense, which is hardly a big surprise. But at least it's good to be able to make some concrete statement. So let me now explain where this no-go result is coming from. So it's quite simple. So, I'm effective field theorist. So, from effective field theory point of view, this long string is a system of Goldstones. Well, actually, it's a bit weird because we used to think there are no Goldstones in two dimensions. So, here we're talking about Goldstones in two dimensions, and you'll see there will be at some point there will be a little bit of price to pay. But still, so the system of Goldstones, we know what effective action describes this system at low energy. So it starts from Nambu-Goto term. So, and because I'm talking about long string, so it's convenient to use static gauge where I use x0 as my time and x1 as space coordinates along the string. So there is this term, beta xi. Plus, in principle, there is infinite number of high-dimensional terms coming from integrating out massive bulk modes. Now, we're used, when we talk about system of Goldstones like pions, we used that, well, their three-level scattering amplitudes are universal. They're given just by leading order Lagrangian. And when you start talking about loop scattering, you need to include counter terms. So there is a finite number of parameters, but there are new parameters appear when we start calculating loops in the derivative expansion. So this theory of Goldstone is special. Namely, not only three level, but also one loop amplitudes are universal here. And it's easy to see just from if you try to write possible counter terms, which would be at the next order in the derivative expansion. Well, it should be some geometric invariant corresponding to the embedding of a string. So this is induced metric, of course. So then the possible terms which one could have written at the next order in the derivative expansion would be some combination of Einstein term and of two different contractions of the extrinsic curvature. Now for a string in two dimensions, so Einstein term is a total derivative. So extrinsic curvature, it vanishes on shell, so it can always be removed by field redefinition. And these three guys, they're related by Gauss-Kadazy. So in this series, there is simply no counter term which you can write at one loop order. So also one loop amplitudes in this series, they're also fixed by the classical Lagrangian. So then to check integrability, well, the most direct way to do it is just to calculate processes with particle production. So you just calculate whether, let's say, 2, 2, 2, 4. It vanishes on solutions of Nambu-Kota equation, because solutions of Nambu-Kota equation, they like Nambu-Kota equations can be written.
But if you include the K term, then
it doesn't. No, this is the leading order term interaction. So it vanishes on the leading order field equations. That means one can, by using field redefinition, one can move it to higher order. So effectively, that means there is no such operator. There is no operator independent of this order in derivative expansion. So check integrability when you know the action. Well, it's straightforward. You just calculate. So you guys can see what I'm writing here.
Chalk is not pretty.
Shall I use another color? Or?
You should be lower than the.
Okay, so as I said, that if you know the Lagrangian, well, it's kind of straightforward to check whether the series is integrable or not. You just start calculating amplitudes. So at classical level, tree level, Nambu-Kota is integrable theory. Now, if you calculate this 2 to 4 scattering, then you find that at one loop, there is particle production unless d is equal. So there is 2 to 4 is non-zero if d is not equal to 3 or 26. So which is related to the fact that light cone quantization of a string, of bosonic string, is compatible with non-linearized Lorentz symmetries in 26 and 3 dimensions. I'll comment later on that. But going to say now, that's not very relevant. So what matters that in d equal 4, there is particle production here. So that proves that theorem. But actually, it's fun to explore a little bit more properties of this amplitude, because it turns out, well, I will need it later for the argument later. Kind of before doing the actual calculation, also it's good to think what one would expect from these amplitudes, how they could have looked like. And I already told you, well, this is a series of Goldstones. So well, it's invariant under shifts, obviously. But also there is invariance under non-linearized boosts, so which act like boost in the alpha I plane, where alpha is the Wolfschmidt index, I is the transverse index. So it acts it's like this, delta j sigma alpha, where sigma is a Wolfschmidt coordinate, plus xi d alpha xj. So there is this symmetry which is non-linearly realized. So as a consequence of shift invariants, these amplitudes are soft. They vanish when momentum of one leg one external leg goes to zero, which in this case it's obvious, unlike for pions. So there is a derivative on every field in the Lagrangian, so soft property of the amplitude. It's obvious. However, one expects now that there should be actually additional softness because there is also boost current which is conserved. One may expect that that leads kind of to even softer behavior than usually for Goldstone amplitudes. And indeed, it's straightforward to run the current algebra argument. So, namely, what one can do, one as usual, one writes the expression. So, if this is the boost current, then it should have, in general, it should have this form as I beta sigma alpha. This is boost. This is shift. So it's geometric part of the boost current. Well, in principle, there could be extra piece. Well, there is extra piece, which is coordinate independent and depends on other fields. So this is a general form of the boost current. Now, if one writes the condition for this boost current to be conserved and makes use of the fact that shift current is conserved, that one finds that shift current itself is a derivative. So it's d beta of beta I alpha, where k is this operator which appears here. So for instance, for Nambu-Gotha theory, it takes a form, starts from d alpha xi, plus, let me introduce kind of the little, this is supposed to be capital K, this is little k, so this is a nonlinear part of this operator. And for Nambu-Gotha theory, this nonlinear part, it starts from lx squared xi t alpha beta plus higher order terms, where t is the energy momentum tensor for d minus 2 free bosons. Now, the moment we have that, we can now run the standard current algebra argument. So let me erase here. Namely, write the condition that the divergence of the shift current is zero, and then we plug shift current in that form. So the first term, the term linear in field, gives rise to LSD pole. So that gives rise to the on-shell amplitude with one extra Brannon. And here one gets one p coming from the divergence, but another p from the fact that the operator which appears here, the second term in the shift current, is itself a derivative. So one gets this expression. So this is a word identity for shift current in this case. And now the usual argument would be, well, this is nonlinear operator. So there are no singularities in this operator. So that means that this amplitude, so this should be O of p squared. Well, this is really the standard argument how one proves that fine scattering amplitudes are solved. But here, just I used of extra fact that my current is itself is a derivative as a consequence of existence of the boost current. Now, it all works nice. And actually, that's correct statement in higher dimensions. But when one checks with the answer, when one checks with this 2 to 4 amplitude which we obtained there, one finds not only that that there is a non-integral part of that amplitude, but that non-integral part also violates this property. And this violation, of course, it should be coming from some extra singularities which should be present in this nonlinear piece. And then by playing a little bit with diagrams, one realizes there are two kinds of contributions, two kinds of additional singularities which arise in two-dimensional theory. They all appear only from this leading cubic term for the shift current. And there are two kinds of diagrams which give rise to this additional singularity. So there are first, so let me take the, so let me consider the situation when the soft momenta has only p plus component. So then there are kind of this kind of diagram where this cross is the insertion of K. So there are diagrams, well, roughly of this type. So there is a soft momenta entering here now, and if both of these if this state is not is left moving, then when p plus goes to zero, this leg goes on shell. So in other words, when necessarily soft kinematics necessarily implies collinear singularities because we're in 1 plus 1 dimensions. So that wouldn't happen in high dimensions. That wouldn't happen in generic for generic configuration of the momenta. So that's the price to pay for dealing with Goldstone bosons in two dimensions. And there is another similar contribution coming now from this kind of diagram. So now it's again, this is the insertion of that operator. So there is a soft momenta coming in here. Actually, let me draw one. Yeah. Doesn't really matter, but well, I will use it later. So here, normally one would expect, well, so here's similar story. So this left moving guy enters here. So when p plus goes to zero, then one expects, normally one would expect to get a cut from this loop here. But famously, in 1 plus 1 dimensions, sometimes one gets poles from the loop integrals where one normally would expect cuts, or even higher order poles. That was discussed by, like in the early 80s, by Coleman and Thun. So there are these two kinds of singularities, collinear and Coleman-Thun type singularities, which in general number of dimensions, they contribute here. And they give rise, so they're also associated to violation of integrability is associated also with particle production. Well, actually, in D=3 and D=26, we knew that there are integrable series. As I already told you, in both in D=3 and D=26, one can quantize bosonic string using light cone quantization. And light cone quantization is compatible with nonlinearized Poincaré symmetry. Well, of course, it's compatible in D=26, but also it's compatible by somewhat trivial reasons in D=3 also, because the usual anomalous commutator is this G plus I, G plus J, but D=3, I is equal to J necessarily. So it's also, so it's equal to zero both in D=3 and D=26. Using light cone quantization, one can find finite volume spectrum of this theory. And from that finite volume spectrum, one can extract the corresponding S matrix. So I think me and Raphael and Victor talked about this here. So I don't want to go into much detail about that. But there is a S matrix of this form. So it's very simple theory. It's a theory with pure transitions. So there is no reflections. And there is a S matrix of this form. This is phase shift in the 2-2-2 scattering between left and right movers. So S is a Mandelstam S. It's center of mass energy. And this is the S matrix of kind of Wolschitz theory of free bosonic string. In particular, one can plug this S matrix in TBA equations and reconstruct the spectrum, the string spectrum from there. So we know the answer that in D=3 and D=26, there is this integrable S matrix, which is compatible with nonlinearized Lorentz symmetry. But actually, one of the questions which drove us into this project, well, it seemed fun to understand it just from staring the amplitude. So okay, we have like there are smart people in 70s who solved this theory using light cone quantization. But so if somebody comes to you and says, well, this S matrix, it's a very simple S matrix. It's nonlinear. And when you have 1 or 24 flavors, that corresponding theory realizes nonlinearly d-dimensional Poincaré, it sounds one should be able to do it just staring, kind of studying properties of this S matrix. That's what we're trying to do. And it turns out quite non-trivial. So first of all, in one direction, which I won't really use that one direction, I will use another direction. So, but let me say briefly how it goes in one direction. So how to check that this is the only S matrix which is compatible compatible with Lorentz symmetry. Well, one makes use of this word identity. So you want part. So what happens? So this word identity. It's, yeah. So roughly. So this diagram. If kind of if I write this operator insertion of this operator addressed by kind of stuff which comes from this propagator. Let me call it N3. So here there is the same thing. Let me call again that N3. This is just the leading order form factor of that operator which I wrote here. In this particular, at the pole, the place where these diagrams contribute to violation of double softness, so these diagrams, they factorize. So here one gets something which roughly have a product of N3 times four-point amplitude, where here it's the sum of this momenta. Oh, sorry, Q minus. K minus plus Q minus appears here. And here, instead, one gets Q minus, K minus, and here it's M6. So the way integrability is possible, there should be conciliation between these two class of contributions which violate double softness. And also, if the theory is integrable, that this M6, it can, by factorization, it can be, roughly, it can be written as a product of because it's six particle process, but it can be written as a product of pairwise scattering. So from writing the equation that these two kind of contributions cancel into particle production, the non-double soft part cancels, one gets a functional equation for this amplitude, and one sees that the this exponential is the only possible answer which is compatible with integrability. So that kind of that goes one way that shows that in particular, because one can write many other amplitude, massless amplitudes, which would also at the leading order at the tree level agree with Nambu-Goto action. So it's kind of one possible quantization of Nambu-Goto theory. So in particular, one can write also one can write phase shift like that, which S minus I M squared S plus I M squared. So this is also the healthy S matrices, which at the leading order in derivative expansion, but the three level, they also reproduce scattering amplitudes of Nambu-Goto. But of all this and some products of this kind of rational functions, but this argument shows that only this phase shift is the one which is compatible with integrability. Okay, that was nice, but now we want to have an argument in the other direction. So we want to prove that, so that was a necessary condition. So we want to prove that indeed this S matrix is integrable. How am I doing on time? Left. Okay, good. So we wanted to prove it in the other direction. We wanted to. Okay, great, thanks. I think I'm doing well. By the way, you guys are invited to ask questions. It's unusually quiet. I don't know what that means. I lost everybody. It's all trivial.
So dimensional radialization preserves all these nonlinear symmetries.
Yeah, so, right. So, yeah, when we're doing, indeed, it's nice that we have, that makes life much a lot simpler, that there is a regularization here which preserves this non-linearized symmetry, which is Dimirac. Yeah, so.
And you have to worry about including the Einstein-Hilbert term as an Anisimov
property term. Well, it's an Anisimov operator. So indeed, in calculating higher amplitudes, one should include it with a particular term. But there is no, it's not an independent operator. It's basically, in Dimirac, for instance, coefficient in front of it is fixed. Yeah, so. Okay, so we want to prove now it's in the other way. So we want to prove that this necessary condition also is sufficient, so that, and we know that's the case, But for the purposes which I'm going to, like for what I will need later, actually I will need this argument. So it's not just I'm trying on purpose to show something simple in a complicated way here. And it is somewhat messy. So the argument which we have right now, it's not very nice. So it's there should be a better way. I feel there should be a better way to do it. But the way we did it, it's brute force. So basically, we inductively proved that we can build a Lagrangian compatible with non-linearized Lorentz symmetry, which would reproduce this amplitude order in order in perturbative expansion. Well, and actually, interesting property of this amplitude, if you expand it in energy, it's absolutely convergent series. So there is nothing in this theory. All what it is there is perturbative expansion. So we don't even need to think about non-perturbative contribution here. So actually, we have somewhat more general statement. So we have what we proved is the following statement. So if the following two conditions are satisfied. So if you have a theory which agrees with Nambu-Goddard, if you look at the 2-2-2 scattering and it agrees with Nambu-Goddard Lagrangian, it's the same as in Nambu-Goddard at 3 and 1 loop level. If non-double soft amplitudes in this theory, if they satisfy that word identity, then this theory has also fully realized non-linearized Poincaré invariant, target space Poincaré invariants. So the moral message of, I think the way I see it, it basically tells us, well, so this breakdown of integrability, it's anomaly, of course, and it's kind of arises as a conflict between this classical symmetry, which is responsible for infinite dimensional symmetry, which is responsible for integrability of Nambu-Goddard, and between non-linearized Poincaré symmetry. We're kind of used to the fact that usually if you can manage to cancel the anomaly at one loop, then it also that's good enough. Then you can continue at higher orders. So I think this is a kind of the message of this argument. And just I don't want to go in detail through the proof, but basically the argument, the proof is it's inductive in the number of legs of the process and the number of loops in the process, and the loops correspond to the number of derivatives. So we have a base of induction here, and then we assume, so if we manage to construct, if we managed, so we have a theory.
Did you say that if you go to higher, you cannot trust any number to, you have to have
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm trying to prove, let me pick particular realization. That means
it's not using the string.
Well, it's effective theory. I'm doing long range effective theory. I'm not talking about it. Okay. Effective theory.
Yeah,
maybe effective theory.
It's effective for one loop, but at higher loop, you definitely need.
No, that's what I'm really proving. I'm proving, so I have this S matrix. I pick my favorite regularization scheme, which in this case is DIMRAG. It allows me to preserve on the symmetries. And I'm trying to write a Lagrangian order by order in derivative expansion to reproduce this S matrix. And what I'm proving inductively, that I will be able to reproduce this S matrix, like adding these high order terms which you are talking about, but such that they will be all geometric invariants. So provided I know that I can write a Lagrangian always, which would reproduce local Lagrangian, which will reproduce the S matrix, because the S matrix satisfies usual locality, causality, like unitarity, all the properties which you want from it to be satisfied. Non-trivial part here is that I want this Lagrangian to be written as a sum of geometric invariants to take these higher order terms which are there. So that's what we're proving. So the way we prove it, so we're doing an induction in terms of number of legs and loops. Let's say we manage to do it up to some order, and then at next order either in N or in L. So we get that, well, there is a particle production. So and basically, well, the point is that one can the only the so that means that in principle there can be two kind of vortices. So either we go at one order higher in loop expansion or one order higher in leg expansion. So we get particle production. We know that we should be able to cancel that amplitude leading to particle production with local counter term, because kind of we know there should exist a theory which describes this S matrix. So now we want to make sure that this counter term is also compatible with a nonlinearized Lorentz symmetry. But also we know that this counter term should be double soft, because single soft part of the amplitude it show is already fixed by word identities. It corresponds to the lower part of the Lagrangian. So the deviation should be double soft, and then it's straightforward to check that for if n is equal to 4, which corresponds to 2 scattering, and L is larger than 1, or for is n equal to larger to 4, that all double soft counter terms which you can write, they would contain at least two derivatives on each field, and that means that can be promoted to geometric invariant, because extrinsic curvature it starts from d squared x. So I'm not sure how comprehensible was that, but if you want, I can kind of go with you.
What is the final statement? So the amplitude that satisfies this word identity are what? What is the statement?
So the, if I have a theory which at 2 scattering agrees with Nambu-Goto, the 3-in-1 loop, and if the non-double soft of the amplitudes is, satisfies the word identity, then the theory has non-linearized Lorentz symmetry.
Okay.
So in particular, for d equal 3 and d equal 26.
It doesn't have to be Nambu-Goto. I mean,
well, I'm not sure what Nambu-Goto means.
I mean, are you saying that this is the only option is usual Nambu-Goto string? By Nambu-Goto, I mean no additional extra.
But that's even. What I mean is a scheme dependent statement, right? If you choose a particular scheme.
No, I'm saying.
Well, this is a classical Lagrangian. You start out with an amplitude. There are divergences here, and you can add counter terms. So, So.
Is it a usual string or is it QCD string?
I'm not sure what usual. But at d equals 3 and d equals 26, that's the usual string is.
Do you have other option than the usual string? That's the question. Is there other solution?
Well, actually, already d equals 3 is something different. No, but essentially here I'm telling you, apart from this special d equals 3 case, there is no other solution. So that's what I've proven for you. But also what I've proven to you, and I will use it later, that at d equals 3 and d equals 26, without relying on light cone quantization or any other information, just from this S matrix, I've proven for you that S matrix that usual string is Lorentz invariant, which doesn't sound like that great achievement given how messy that proof was. But
what about the usual argument that the QCD string is a polyakov? That because of the retracing identity, somehow the QCD string has a very different property when it contains to when it starts to bend and at corners and things like that.
Well,
here you're in a regime where, in some sense, the physical curvature doesn't matter, which means the QCD part of the string is not yet.
No, I'm not sure. I'm talking, that's statement in all orders in the extrinsic curvature.
So the QCD string has to violate Lorentz invariance.
No, it violates integrability. So, QCD has to satisfy Lorentz invariance, but. But you see, but it is because it came from Lorentz invariant theory. But the no-go theorem, which I was proving, is that tells that for nc equals 3 on nc equal 5, QCD string violates integrability. So.
Integrability,
the absence of there is particle production on the whole sheet of QCD string for finite number of colors. Yes, I didn't need this whole machinery to prove that. That's just really one loop calculation, because that's what I said there. One loop amplitudes are universal for all strings, which don't have any extra massless particle. And you just find that in d equal 4, there is particle production.
So you mentioned violation of integrability as I'm thinking of it as an anomaly. Is there a classical and the number of classical symmetries.
Yeah, because it's classical level.
Well, Nambu-Goto theory, both integrable and Lorentz invariant, right? So, and then depending on what you do, you can either say quantize it in like using Lightcon gauge. So Lightcon gauge.
Responsible for
integrability? There is some story which, well, there is a paper by, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing the name right, Pohlmeier or some kind of thing. Yeah, which I wasn't able to read.
There should be some infinite set of conserved charges here. Well, it's not really important for me. But
what about B equal 2? Because then we know QCD stream. I mean,
well, no, in that sense, there are no transverse modes there, right? So
yeah,
there's not much.
It's only the explicit curvature. So
no, that's from this point, it's an empty theory from this point of view, right? There are only kind of some topological.
Essentially, what I'm saying is that in the QCD thing, there's a part which is this Goldstone mode, and then there's another part which is very important, which is this ray tracing mode.
No, QCD string at low energy, that's all. There are only Goldstone bosons. There are no.
But
okay,
but in D equal 2, you really know what is the QCD.
Well, but
these are the distinction is purely in terms of explicit curvature. Of course, there's no point here.
No, but there are only some topological observables, right? So there
are
which
how many times the string.
Yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking here about the scattering of actual physical excitations on the bullshit.
But isn't that important to capture the physics of the string to understand how it folds itself? I mean, in 2D.
Well,
it
depends on the question which I'm trying to ask.
I don't think it's important.
For confinement, it is important. You agree, right?
We ask concrete questions, and we can discuss whether it's important.
So you swing QCD outside of confinement?
Let me talk about QCD now,
right? So let me continue and say something about QCD. As I said, well, in principle, I didn't need to run through these all arguments, although it was fun, to say something about QCD at finite number of colors. So there is lattice data, which, yeah.
As you said, these arguments are quite complicated. Can we indicate when, in this case, you don't have left-left scattering, right? You only have left-right.
Right, yeah. Because kind
so,
of
for example, yeah. Now that we develop this technology, is there something that we could learn, for example, if you have left-left instead of Lorentz invariant, could you predict how Lorentz invariant would be broken in that case?
Well, I'm very confused what left-left scattering means. And I'm very happy that in this series there is no such a thing as left-left scattering, but we can discuss later on.
Something else. So, but maybe this is a bit jumping ahead. But here, for example, you have this notion of loops. But if your CFD, your world sheet was, for example, a bunch of Goldstone bosons coupled to something strongly coupled, and this notion of loops might be a bit too perturbative.
I know what it is, right? So it's weakly coupled theory at low energy.
So you assume that everything is weakly coupled, right?
Well, no, I know, because from assumption that there are no extra masses modes, that only gapless modes are these Goldstones, I know the theory, and it is weakly coupled, right?
Because your argument was now, if I have an S matrix, and I complete it into a...
But this S matrix also is just from the answers, because I can expand it in energies, right? It's absolutely convergent series, so it is a matrix of a theory which is weakly coupled at low energies. I can expand it in S. But really, what I've proven to you so far, I just proven that if I start with that Lagrangian and at D equal 3, D equal 26, when there is no particle production in one loop, I can then add higher order counter terms or the by order derivative expansion to reproduce this S matrix. So I think you're trying to be more general. Here I'm saying something very concrete and not too interesting, I think. But So let me get back to QCD string. There is something. So the reason I was telling you that I probably won't have time to go into that in much detail, but actually, well, many people from our papers talked about it here. So the reason I think that it's maybe a good time to make concrete progress about pure glue strings is that for a while, there was good lattice data, which probes excitations of the string. But up until recently, the situation was that even though there was lattice data, but there was no good theoretical tool
kind of to interpret that lattice data. So the existing perturbation theory was badly asymptotically divergent in the regime when lattice can do something. So that changed a few years ago. So with Raphael and Victor, we kind of came up with an alternative way to calculating finite volume spectrum of string excitations, which is based not on the kind of straightforward perturbation theory, but on thermodynamic beta ansatz, which gives much better convergent results. So now, actually, we can learn something from lattice. So we can there is a chance to get extra experimental, so to say, input from lattice people, and that's what really opens the way to make some concrete progress in understanding the dynamics of QCD string. I don't know whether I will have time to show you a couple of slides. But one thing we learned is that QCD string, so in addition to this massless Goldstone bosons, it doesn't have any extra massless particles for n equals 3 and n equals 5. But it does have a massive excitation, which kind of with a mass below the mass of the lightest global. So it's a two-dimensional excitation. And somewhat surprisingly, it turned out it was a kind of, I would expect it to be some breathing mode of a string. So it's I would expect to be a scalar excitation. It turned out to be a pseudoscalar particle to localized on a string. So there was no sign of scalar excitation. And well, it was, so let me give you the mass. So the mass for was 185 in string units for n equals 3. And the mass was 1, somewhat smaller, not too much smaller, but for n equals 5. So these are all what is known so far. Hopefully there will be some progress soon. So the question because we wanted kind of really say something definite about n equal to infinity case. So it doesn't look like this mass goes to, it does go to zero. Like that does become smaller, but it doesn't look like it wants to go to zero. But still, so we wanted to see, is it possible that this particle becomes massless in the n to infinity limit and kind of can restore integrability? Yes. So it's this one is roughly half of the lightest global. Yeah, I don't remember. I think the for SU5, it also does go on global mass, lightest global does go on down a little bit. I think a little bit smaller than that, but also well, it's a big shift. It's around half of the gap. Yeah. So we wanted, well, actually, there are two questions one may also ask. One may ask, so could it be that QCD string is, maybe it's crazy to expect it to be integrable and equal to infinity limit. There is no good reason for that. But maybe it becomes integrable and in the high energy limit, right? Because there is this 2D theory which defined at all energies. And at the end of the day, it comes from some relatively simple bulk theory, which is asymptotically free. So you may expect that 2D theory to be somewhat simple. So one may also, well, I think more reasonable thing maybe to expect that it could be that this 2D theory becomes integrable at high energies. So anyway, we wanted just to see whether adding a single pseudoscalar particle on the Volt sheet of a string, whether we may use it to cancel particle production. And just as a warm up, before doing that, we did something simpler, which will be again complicated way to derive well-known result. Again, it will be encouraging that we will get a sensible answer. So instead of adding a scalar, we now add in a pseudoscalar. Oh, sorry, instead of adding a pseudoscalar, which we have in QCD, let's add a scalar and see whether one can use a scalar, single scalar on the Volt sheet to cancel particle production. Well, then one would write an action like this. So at the leading order, one starts with usual Nambu-Goto action, alpha beta plus d alpha xi, d beta xi, just because one wants to have integrability. So one includes extra scalar here. So now at higher orders, there will be particle production at one loop. But now I'm not insisting on full Poincaré symmetry acting on this guy. So I can write a counter term. And so if I call again, if I call this thing h, so there is a counter term which has this form. Square root of minus h. Let me call this coupling constant q. Phi times r of h. There is this counter term which I can write. This counter term, so it leads in particular to cubic vertex connecting two axes. And so this x is x, this phi. So this cubic vortex on itself vanishes on shell, but there is, it contributes to two scattering through this. So it does contribute to scattering at higher order. So I'm going to move it to higher order by field redefinition, but it's more convenient to work in this way. And it turns out that indeed one may choose the value of this coupling constant and use this scalar to cancel particle production. And the coupling constant turns out to be square root of 25 minus d over 48 pi, which is, if I now be specific to d equal 4, I find the value 373. I will need it later. So now, of course, that's not surprising. That's just this way of discovering linear dilaton background. So there is, of course, we know what this theory is. You can rewrite it in a Polyakov language and kind of in this coupling in Nambu-Gotha. So this is a Liouville field. So this coupling is just corresponds that, yeah, I coupled my bosons to linear dilaton CFT. And this value in that language, it's the value of this coupling, which is fixed by requiring that I get the correct central charge. And in particular, well, if I looks at the structure of shift current here, so here one gets again, one sees that there is a correction, which now what appears here is not an energy momentum tensor of free bosons, but there is also correction which acquires a contribution from this energy momentum of a linear dilaton. So, but it's kind of, it was a nice check that we're doing something sane. So we kind of, so far imposing this integrability requirement was leading us to theories which we know are there.
What about the other? Like 5 pi or d squared pi. Like, where? You know, now the excessive curvature no longer vanish for the x field. So now you can put excessive curvature.
No, but because it's the same, because there's Gauss cadence.
But box x doesn't vanish because now it's sourced by phi.
No, it will vanish if I'm looking at the on-shell amplitude. So if I write something with k, there will be kind of the leading order, I'll get amplitude box x squared, and this amplitude.
But box x is solved by phi, right? It's no longer zero.
No, I'm looking at the scattering. So this diagram, it won't, if I, because there are, this x is a massless, if I look at this amplitude, this won't contribute to scattering.
Yeah. But,
so.
There are other terms you can.
Sorry?
There are other terms.
Sorry?
There are other terms you can.
No. But,
the one you have.
But also, well, it's important because I want also to preserve shift invariance on phi. This term, naively, it breaks shift invariance on phi. But of course, what I have here is a total derivative. This is Euler number. So actually, this term doesn't break shift invariance acting on phi. And I should say, for this theory, one can, like, verbatim write the same argument, this ugly argument, which I inductive argument, and say, and this theory, though this Lorentz invariant theory, it's the same S matrix. It's the same, it's S matrix, it's E to the S, with three flavors, but I just interpret two of these flavors as my Goldstone bosons, and another flavor is dilaton field. And that agrees, there were papers where people were looking at light cone quantized theory, so they found that for in the sector with zero Liouville momentum, that indeed light cone quantization actually agrees with the linear dilaton. So it's that's one way to think about a linear dilaton background. It's kind of you do light cone quantization, but you're kind of happy to live with small Poincaré symmetry, not acting on all the fields there. Okay, let's now get to pseudoscalar guy now. So motivated by QCD. We want to replace this guy by pseudoscalar. Let me call it A, because it's kind of axion. So it turns out there is a coupling with very similar properties, which is special to four-dimensional strings. There will be a generalization I'll tell in a moment, but if I have time. What one can write? One can write a coupling of the following type. So. Let me put extra 8 pi here, q d to sigma a, and 1 over 8 pi here, k I alpha gamma, k beta j gamma, epsilon ij, epsilon alpha beta. So there is a That's a Lidian pseudoscalar operator, which one can write on the bulk sheet of a string. So this operator, just as earlier number, it also has topological interpretation, special to two-dimensional surface in four dimensions. So when you have two-dimensional surface in four dimensions, then it will self-intersect over the discrete set of points. And if you count the number of points with signs, which are induced by orientation, you compare kind of orientation. You have two surfaces intersecting a point, and you compare the oriented surfaces. So you compare that orientation with orientation of the bulk space. There is then a smooth topological invariant, which is this number, algebraic number of self-intersections. And so what's written here is the topological density, which counts that self-intersection number. So in particular, this coupling, despite appearance, just like it was for linear dilaton, it also doesn't break shift symmetry for axion. So one can now ask the same question. So can I use this coupling to particle production, to cancel particle production? And the answer turns out to be yes. And then the rest of the argument really goes. So from the point of view of question of about integrability, this I see no difference between kind of this theory and linear dilaton theory. It's just I'm using different couplings. So it's a theory with the same S matrix, but it's a different theory because I'm assigning different quantum numbers to this guy. It used to be a scalar before. Now it's a pseudoscalar. And the value of Q, which corresponds to integrable theory, it's the same one. However, I don't know in this case, I don't know any kind of Polyakov-like interpretation of this theory. And I don't know whether it exists. I don't know whether there is a way to promote it to meaningful interacting string theory. In particular, what appears here, so if one looks at the correction to the shift current, so that's kind of that's indication. So here, we don't know exactly a kind of direction between this integrability calculations and usual central charge calculation, but at least it's encouraging that energy momentum tensor appears in the shift current. So kind of there should be a way to relate what we are doing to usual central charge calculation. What appears here in the correction to the shift current, because now I'm making use of the operator, which depends not on the intrinsic geometry of a string, but on the extrinsic geometry of a string. Now the operator which appears here, well, it has very different form. It's something, it's Q L squared. Well, I'm not sure it's very instructive, but something with epsilon. Well, there is d gamma d beta a plus some symmetrization. So there is some operator of this kind, which is not really, it doesn't look like energy momentum of something. So it really kind of, it looks like it's different geometric mechanism for canceling particle production. However, from the point of view of scattering on the fold sheet, that theory looks as good as linear dilaton theory. Let me skip it. So there is some generalization of this story to higher dimensions. Let me just say a couple of words. Actually, one in any number, so that looked very special to four dimensions. But actually, in any number of dimensions, one can add, one has three options. One can add either a scalar with respect, so now you have OD minus two symmetry of rotations around the string. So one can add a scalar with respect to this group. One can anti-symmetric tensor with respect to this group. Or one can add a traceless symmetric guy. And there is a similar coupling, although I don't know topological interpretation for these couplings, like for these guys in high dimensions. So it's four dimensional seems to be special in that case, but mainly just I don't have good education in topology. So maybe there is something, but I'm not aware of anything. But there are similar couplings which one can write, and one can use these particles also to cancel particle production. And actually, scalar and anti-symmetric tensor, they work at d less than 26. So you know that from, like you know that for Liouville theory, Liouville field becomes ghost at d larger than 26. But here it's another way around. So this guy, one can use it for d larger than 26. So I don't know what the meaning of that, but now coming back to QCD, well, there is this coupling. And a year ago, with Victor and Raphael, we actually measured that coupling from lattice data, because that's the leading pseudoscalar interaction of that massive axion, which one has in a QCD string. So we opened our paper. And the number which we found there was that on the QCD string for the massive guy, the value which we have in our paper was 0.382 plus minus 0.004, which is the same at the 2% level. I should say we never meant that determination to be high precise determination. So it was fun to make it, but we were mainly happy that we can interpret the data, we can determine the mass of this guy. Okay, we determined the coupling, but that was only statistical uncertainty. So now we looked in more detail into that. So we estimated some systematic and theoretical uncertainty. I think the safe statement that they agree at the 10% level, these two numbers, both for SU3 and SU5. So mass did shift, I wrote the value somewhere, we are here. Mass did go down somewhat when one goes from SU3 to SU5. The coupling really stayed the same. Now let me finish just with listing three interpretations for this, which I can think of. So first of all, of course, it could be numerology or coincidence. I keep coming up for myself with various reasons why there could be such a coincidence. Actually, that still will be an interesting option. Another, probably most interesting option would be that, maybe mass goes to zero when n goes to infinity. And this theory that QCD string does become integrable in large n limit, and kind of this is the theory of large n QCD. I think that would be too optimistic, but if that's the case, we'll know soon. So Mike Tepper now, he also got kind of excited about this. He promises us that he'll calculate soon up to maybe even SU12. So I think we'll know soon what happens with the value of this mass here. Finally, it could be that theory, maybe it describes UV asymptotics of planar QCD string. Definitely, this is very interesting. But I think, all options are very interesting because basically there is this well-posed question: what is this two-dimensional theory which lives on the world sheet of QCD flux tube? And I didn't have to show you a few slides, but as I told you, there are now we have tools now where we can make progress in using lattice data. When we can make the progress, concrete progress is possible in towards understanding what this theory is. And even if it's numerology, it's even more interesting that that means we still have no idea what this theory, how it looks like. But I think all of these options kind of interesting because one can make progress. Okay, thanks. Let me stop here. Yes.
What are the boundary conditions for this pseudo scalar when you end up with some loop?
When you end, because here, we're not talking about the kind of talk about Wilson loop without, not Wilson loop, but Polyakov loop. So there are no boundaries. Now you're asking, you really now want to think what happens here.
Yes.
I don't know. Presumably, but again, I can just write some effective operators there. Presumably, one can deduce it from data. So far, we're trying to avoid these configurations because it's cleaner to look at the strings without edges. But in particular, there is old data from early, from 2003. Most lattice data which we were using is by Mike Tepper and collaborators. But there is this data by Julius Kuti and Morningstar, where they were actually looking at the strings with Dirichlet boundary conditions. And one sees there the same pseudoscalar excitation with the same mass. So at least, that's a nice consistency check. But I'm not sure. Maybe one should be possible to say something about kind of the boundaries matrix. Right.
It's an integrable boundary condition.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, so theoretically it's under worse control kind of because you have more freedom. But on the other hand, on the lattice side, it may be easier to study because open strings kind of you can work with shorter strings. So well possible that one can learn something about that. Mm-hmm.
So what is known about this QCD stream? Was it proposed a long time ago, or it's just recent that people proposed that?
No, what do you mean proposed? Well,
this particular I mean, into the excessive curvature.
No, this is just this is something which we saw in the lattice data.
Yeah, I know.
So that so there's a receptor.
The interaction of that swing, or what is known about that swing?
Well, I think I told you everything that is known.
Okay. So it was not proposed before. That was it.
As far as
they don't propose, you know, they try different explicit type of strings.
Yeah, so
they try all sorts of excessive, you know.
Well, there are rich strings proposed by Polyakov. Polyakov proposed that in like K squared term, but that was problematic because it leads to ghosts. Polyakov also, in the same paper actually, he proposed this interaction, pointed out that there is this topological term which is present on the string, and later there was a paper by Nair and Mazur who argued that if you introduce theta term in the bulk, it should give rise to this kind of interaction. But what we see, but they didn't talk about adding extra mode which coupled to this thing, well, because you wouldn't think about that without having the data. So yeah. What we see from lattice data is that, yeah, that's why we call this guy axion, because it is kind of axion which is coupled to this topological density. Of course, we don't know whether there is actual shift symmetry there, approximate shift symmetry. It just happens to be the leading operator which is allowed by symmetries. But
in very little angle, you encounter a whole bunch of bugs, right? With
yeah.
Transitions.
Yes.
Is it maybe somehow this A is kind of, is it? I don't know.
Yeah. So I know the only but it's really I can tell you. Yeah. I should let me switch the microphone. I think I could. I can tell you one really. Yeah. So.